Welcome to The Good Stuff with Sonoma County Wine Growers. I'm Virginie Boone alongside Carissa Cruz, President CEO of The Wine Growers. We're here to talk about wine. What makes? I almost went into wine straight away. We're here to talk about wine, but also what makes Sonoma County such a special place to grow, make, and enjoy wine.
Exactly.
I'm clearly thinking about wine.
You jumped ahead. That's all right. Like, I mean, that is the good stuff.
That is what happens.
Should we just do our Tuesday night wines right now?
We could just get it done with.
We could flip the whole show.
I may or may not have opened them. I don't know. welcome, Carissa.
Thank you. Good to see you as always.
Yeah, so you have continued your journeys around the world and back again. The nonstop travel of 2024. So
I'm getting a lot of miles. You know,
tell us where you've been and what you've been doing.
So yeah, recently, and I know we talked about it sort of coming up, but we were in Aspen for our annual trip to the Aspen Classic, which is Food and Wine Magazine's annual event. It was in its 41st year. Super fun. I mean, as we're in our third year, we've talked a lot about Healdsburg event, our third year of the Healdsburg event. Really, that event was inspired by the Aspen Classic and just this amazing, I call it a three-day party, essentially, where you're celebrating and honoring chefs and growers and wineries and just enjoying, you know, friendship and company and great wine, of course, and great food and the beauty of Colorado. So,
yeah.
I mean, I did grow up partially part of my life, can't say that word, in Colorado Springs. So it's always nice to kind of be back in the mountains, which are just beautiful and the fresh air. And anyway, I think it rivals Sonoma County as being literally one of the most beautiful places in the world. So, but I do love Sonoma County.
But you have to bring wines from Sonoma County because they don't have much to offer locally. So tell us sort of what some of the highlights were in terms of the wines that people enjoyed, some reactions. Like, what are people into at some of these parties?
Yeah. So what was exciting for us is last year we did a really big activation on their 40th anniversary. We were the wine partner for the Top of the Mountain Publishers Party. It's sort of the hottest ticket of parties, if there is such a thing at Aspen. They're all hot tickets. So this year we kind of did the other side of it, and we were the wine partner for the welcome reception and event. So what a great way to kick off the Aspen Classic than by having our Sonoma County wine partners there. So we had great wine partners there. As always, we love to show the diversity of Sonoma County, what we can grow here, the wines we can make, and all of our incredible partners. So we were showcasing the Iron Horse Wedding Cuvée, a rosé from Gary Farrell. We were doing the Stone Street Chardonnay, the Pedroncelli Sauvignon Blanc, the Calling Pinot Noir, and then Saras Ranch Cabernet. So amazing.
Amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was like hard to choose what you wanted to drink. And, it, you know, the reception's only like 2 hours. So
right.
There was a lot of sampling to be done in those 2 hours.
And so were all the bottles empty by the end?
You know, a lot of them were. Good wine. I'm sure you know this. Good wine, people enjoy.
Yeah, it goes first.
And it goes first and fast.
So. Well, yeah, always the true sign of people appreciating what you bring. And so, it's a great representation of Sonoma County.
Yeah.
And you and I were actually able to enjoy something at Saras Ranch recently because they were celebrating 100 years.
Anniversary, I know.
In farming and ranching in Sonoma Valley and hosted a lovely dinner on their property with all the family members there. Quite a statement.
Yeah, what a statement. And how wonderful, too. They announced the release of their new Malbec wine named Catherine after John Saras. So the Taylors and Buck and John's dad. So their grandmother named after her. And it was actually her 100th birthday. It would have been her 100th birthday on the day they celebrated their 100th anniversary. So that took a lot of thought and is just sort of an amazing tribute and legacy for that family. So yeah, and Taylor was actually, Saras was with us in Aspen, her and her husband Guido, who is with La Prenda Winery. And so it was her first time to Aspen. So she loved it and has already committed to going back, which is really interesting. She's about to have a baby in August. So I was very worried about her and the altitude, but she did just fine, as she would like to tell me. I'm going and leave me alone.
She's like nonstop working with this baby in there.
Nonstop.
She's not letting anything slow her down. So yeah, more great things to come from the Saras family, I have no doubt.
Yes. And the fun thing, back to the Aspen welcome, the fun thing is the publisher or the editor, Hunter Lewis, got up and announced all of the partners. And everyone was like, yay, you know, next. And they had Sonoma County Wine Growers. And literally like cheering erupted in the reception, and we got like the loudest bout of excitement. So it was really fun. And we did all sorts of other activations all weekend long, including a partnership with Amex. But, you know, that's us. Well, Aspen. So much fun.
Bottle that joy and that appreciation and take it with you wherever you go. We will be right back with our guest on The Good Stuff. On The Good Stuff, I'm Virginie Boone here with Carissa Cruz, and our guest today is Dan Rotlisberger, Vineyard Estate Manager for Robert Young Estate Winery in Alexander Valley. And we'll get into Dan's history, but I was just really struck by the fact that he's a fifth generation Alexander Valley farmer. That's a long time. And has been a board member for Sonoma County Wine Growers, so knows a lot about what the work that you're doing.
Absolutely.
And the great-grandnephew of Robert Young's late wife, Gertrude. So welcome, Dan.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
That's a long bio you have. You're not that old for all of that history.
Yeah, I turned 40 in January. So, yeah, we're getting a lot of stuff done. So, yeah, no, looking forward to the next chapter here at Robert Young, at least.
So the fifth generation part, is that all through sort of starting with Gertrude? Is it through that lineage, or do you have other members of your family that were farmers?
Yeah, so my family originally came to Alexander Valley from Switzerland in 1909 and settled in Alexander Valley near West Soda Rock Lane. They were dairy farmers for the most part, so they worked in the local dairies that were around here and fell in love with the area. So he was able to purchase a property at the end of West Soda Rock Lane there in Alexander Valley, a few hundred acres. And they grew kind of diversified crops back then. So apples, pears, lots of cattle, silage, things like that. And then we've been farming that same piece of property ever since then. It's shrunk over the years. It seems like the old timers sometimes it's, you know, when you're kind of poor farmers, your retirement plan is selling off a chunk of the property. Yeah. So that's happened over the five generations. So We're out there, but we're farming about 30 acres now for the family property there in Alexander Valley and keeping us busy on the nights and the weekends.
And that's where, do you live there, Dan?
Yes. Yeah, my wife lives there with me, with my two daughters, and now a new son.
I was going to say.
7 months old.
The next generation.
Okay, so you have baby brain.
Yeah. It's fun, and it's kind of a family compound. My grandparents live at the top of the hill on the property, and then my mother actually lives in the back of the property, so it's nice. We can kind of cut the girls loose and they can run up and go see great grandma and grandma whenever they want.
Cool.
So yeah, no, it's a really awesome. Cool setup. Yeah.
Wait, and speaking of that, because I follow along on social media and your wife does this little like running thing with your two daughters. What is that all about? Because now I'm thinking they might be running to grandma's house.
Yeah, no, they run a lot farther than to grandma's house. No, they run down our road, and it's just keep the girls busy during the summer type thing.
Yeah.
Originally it was kind of a prep for, they do the school runs, like walkathons and runathons and everything. So that just kind of kept going. Not every night, but it's almost every night. They go down through the vineyards and running around
the
property.
I just thought that was such a great tradition, and to start sort of this, I don't know, it's a family thing. It's a mental wellness thing. It's healthy. It's like, I just love that, all of those things together, and to learn that from such a young age.
I'll join them someday. I haven't quite braved that run yet.
Yeah.
They do it a lot at night, which...
Good for them.
Yeah, that's very good. It's nice and cool.
I just love seeing the photos when we're about to go or we're coming back and, you know, run well done. So.
Yep.
So when did dairy end for your family?
Not too long. So my family never actually owned or operated a dairy.
Okay.
They were dairymen from Switzerland. And in Switzerland, it's kind of more diversified farming. So you got your dairy, and then you have your silage that you grow and your hay crops that you grow for the dairy. So they were really diversified in that. So when they came over here, just worked at other dairies and then kind of just bought the property and farmland and started farming it.
Yeah, that's great. And so then, like, walk us through sort of the generations and kind of how then you finally got into wine grapes.
Yeah, so my grandfather, Fred, was the first one that planted wine grapes. He was a second generation on the property, and he farmed those up until the mid to late 70s, early 80s, and then my grandfather, Dan, took over the property and farming, and that's how I really got into it, helping him on nights and weekends and summer break and everything else. So really kind of grew up in it, and I was raised by my grandparents since I was four.
Okay.
So spent a lot of time out on the property. So we kind of skipped a generation there. We're still counting it. We're still counting it as the fourth on the fifth. But we skipped a generation there in the farming, but happy to bring it back.
So talk about some of those early memories out on the vineyard with your, you know, your grandpa.
Good and bad.
Sure. Well, that's family.
Yeah, so I was really immersed in it. My grandfather, very hard worker. He was actually the first one that actually had a job off the property to help supplement the farming operation. But so he'd do that job and then come home and farm till midnight.
Wow.
Go back to his job at 6 a.m. And it wasn't an easy job. It was gravel mining.
Oh, geez.
Heavy equipment, maintenance and operation. So, yeah, he would come back just tired as heck and covered in dust and everything. And then he'd go back out on the tractor and do that job. So me watching him as I grew up was really inspiring for me, and that's kind of where I got my work ethic from and my passion for farming. We'd go out there and we'd pull leaves. I remember this in junior high. We have to go out and pull leaves. You can't just sit around all summer. So we'd be out there for 8 to 10 hours a day pulling leaves, and this is before iPods and music and everything else. So it was just the worst, most boring job. But it really did teach me, and he you know, told me at the time, he said, you know, never forget the people that have to do this every day.
Yeah.
You know, when you're asking, you know, folks and hiring folks to go out there and work the fields, it's not that fun at times.
Yeah.
You know, it's
hard work.
It's you're in the weather. So it is very, very hard work. So that really kind of instilled in me kind of a respect for our workers and, you know, treating them right, you know, put yourself in their shoes type of thing. So from leaf pulling, I graduated to cane cutting was kind of the next one. So that was my first tractor job. I was, I think, 10 or 11 when I first started that. So pretty much as soon as I could reach the clutch.
I was going to say, that's when you learned how to drive the tractor.
Yeah,
huh?
Exactly.
There you go.
And that was the easiest, most simple job. And then from there, gained a little bit more trust and started doing the things my grandfather didn't want to do anymore. So I was out there sulfur dusting on a Ford 8-end tractor, which is the classic red and white Ford tractors you see with a steel bucket seat going through the vineyard. So I got to see it all hands-on and in person, the good and the bad, and still decided to make it my career.
I was going to say, I mean, what a great education and to be able to literally know how everything is done in that part of the process and having done it. I mean, I think, you know, those are things you can learn a lot in school, but nothing teaches you better than the real world experience.
Yeah, and I always said my grandfather taught me how to be a farmer first, a good farmer. You know, the education's great. You know, the learning the business side of things is great, but just the pure love for farming, that's where I got it from, for sure.
So what do you love about it?
Not being tied to a desk all day, mostly.
For sure, yeah.
It's great. It's you get to get outside, you get to see things. I'm an outdoors type guy. I like to go, we do a lot of fishing, not so much hunting, but definitely a lot of fishing. So we like to get out and enjoy our days. And same thing with the girls on the weekends. We go down to the Russian River and have a little spot down there right below our house. So we're outside people. So this just really kind of fit my life. If I sit down at a computer for more than 2 hours, I've got to get up and get out in the vineyard and go do something and come back to it because I just can't. I can't do it.
Your grandfather must have been so grateful to have you take to it because, I mean, a lot of kids would run away.
Yeah.
Seeing what the hard work was.
Yeah, grateful. And then there is a part of him that kind of, from time to time, he'll ask, why the heck do you want to do this? Like, you're taking the hardest route you can possibly take. I mean, this isn't easy. And you just love it so much and love the land and want to keep it going, you know, more than anything else. So. For me, it's fun. You know, for him, it was, you know, after a 12-hour day on a regular job, it was a little rough. But Yeah. Things are getting a little easier with delegating to other folks that we have helping us out.
So did you always know then you were going to stay in farming or pursue farming in those early days?
For the most part, yeah. I got into computers really big for a little while and was looking at computer science in my probably pre-high school days, which probably would have served me really well, considering where computers went and everything.
But you would have hated every minute.
Yeah.
But yeah, I definitely, looking back on it now, I can't imagine a job like that and doing a job like that. You know, the fact that I could just pick up and, you know, go check with the guys in the field or go make sure a tractor operation's going well or even hop on a tractor and do an operation if it's a slow time and I want to, you know, get something calibrated for the guys. You know, it's there's plenty to do and it's not all, you know, right there at your desk, which is kind of nice.
So, Dan, I know when my husband Steve has a good day, if he comes home smiling, it's because at some point he got to be on a tractor instead of at his desk.
Yeah.
So I'm like, when he's super happy at the end of the day, I'm like, did you drive tractor today? And he's like, I did. And sometimes I'll come home and he's just out on our riding lawnmower and like smiling, grinning ear to ear. Like just, I mean, so I think there's just something about that that lives in your kind of your soul.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's, I mean, a fun day for me would be, you know, going to work at Robert Young and may or may not get on a tractor there, but definitely have a tractor waiting at home and I can hop on it. And I don't put in the hours like my grandfather did. I'll come in before midnight. But yeah, you get home, say hi to the kids and the wife and kiss them goodbye and head up the hill and grab the tractor and
off you go.
Go tinker for a little bit. Even though, you know, we've got, you know, plenty of guys to help us. I like getting out there and it really kind of connects you to what you're doing out there. You get to see every vine as you slowly pass by on the tractor. So, and that's something you can't just go through and, you know, walk the field to do. You know, yeah. Every single vine, you just don't get to see that. So
in addition to your own property, you spent time as a viticulturalist with Redwood Empire Vineyard Management.
I did.
And that, tell us a little bit just kind of about your past work experience.
Yeah, so I worked with Kevin and Linda Barr and Tyler up there at Redwood Empire. Great, great experience. Was there for almost 10 years. And it was, I tell folks everywhere and even college kids kind of just getting out, go work for a company like that because you will see more in 1 year than you'll see anywhere else in at least 5 years. So the different properties and then different property owners with their different philosophies and ways they want things done. And then, you know, layer in five different winemakers for that property. So you see more in that 1 year than you'll see in a lot of years outside or even in your own kind of company.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a, you know, I call that the true vineyard university.
I like it.
You know, coming out of Fresno, I went to Fresno State. So coming out of there, it's, you know, you've got this shiny degree and everything, but man, until you really get out there and get working on it and getting exposed to things, there's a lot more. You got a lot more to learn. So it was great. I mean, that was, I kind of say my grandparents or my grandfather in particular kind of taught me how to be a good farmer. And Kevin and Tyler, you know, taught me the business side and kind of the more the viticultural science side, especially with Tyler. So that was huge. So that makes me feel like I've gotten a pretty well-rounded experience set below my belt.
Yeah, and Redwood Farms, not just in Sonoma County, but a number of different counties. So I think just in Hillside, Valley Floor, so you're seeing it all and lots of different grape varieties as well that you get to work
with. Oh, yeah, certainly. My territory was Alexander Valley in Sonoma County and then all of the Mendocino County properties, which most of it was within that Yorkville-Anderson Valley corridor. So lots of Pinot up there, which I'm so happy I'm not growing Pinot anymore. You can tell Steve I said that.
Okay.
Fighting words.
Yeah. No, it's but no, it was a huge, huge learning experience from, like you said, varieties to personalities too, which, you know, personalities and dealing with people is something that they don't teach you in college.
No. Amen.
In any field.
Yeah.
I'd say 85% of my job is people management. It's within a farming background, but it's people management, which was really eye-opening. And when you have a large company like Kevin and Tyler do, you get to see a lot of it. So it was a good experience, for sure.
I'm intrigued.
I know.
I want to know all the backstory.
that's going to be for the podcast later.
That's the extra minutes. But we have to take a break soon. But just quickly, Dan, you mentioned you're glad you're not farming Pinot. What do you most like to farm?
You know, the home ranch, the family ranch, has had Cabernet Sauvignon since I remember seeing the vines, and that's what we've replanted it to. So that's kind of my favorite one, which really ties in well with the Robert Young connection now. But yeah, Pinot Noir is a fickle little grape. It's tough. It'll do its little thing and then eventually grow out of it, and it's something I'm glad I don't have to deal with anymore.
Well, I think we're lucky in Sonoma County, as we often say, about all the choices and all the diversity
wine. Yeah. Fantastic Pinot Noir wines. Yeah. But from a grower's standpoint, I'm happy to be done with it.
Yeah, just let somebody else grow it.
Well, he'd probably say he wouldn't love farming cab. So, you know, that's why we have so many different farmers, vineyards. It's how it works.
Yeah. Okay, we'll take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll talk more with Dan Rotlesberger. Back on The Good Stuff with our guest, Dan Rotlesberger, Vineyard Estate Manager for Robert Young Estate Winery. And before the break, we were talking about sort of your back history, and you mentioned how much you love farming Cabernet Sauvignon, partly because that's really what you grew up around. But now at Robert Young Estate, I mean, there's a significant history with Cabernet in Alexander Valley there. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, so Robert Young was actually the first person to plant Cabernet Sauvignon in the Alexander Valley back in the 60s, working with UC Davis. And actually, in 2022, replanted that exact block with more Cabernet. You know, it had gotten old and tired. But that's kind of a fun little story. You know, so we look back on that block, and it'll actually produce its first fruit this year.
Oh, wow.
So we're looking forward to
just replanted.
Yeah. So we're looking forward to pulling some fruit from there and making the wine, you know, and sharing that with folks, you know, that he was kind of that pioneer there. And then obviously as well, Robert Young, very well known for their Chardonnay. They have their own Chardonnay clone that Robert worked with UC Davis to develop. It's a clone 17. Robert Young, kind of a smaller clustered Chardonnay clone, but makes very nice, delicate, and really
It's pretty complex.
Chardonnay. Thank you.
Yeah, yes. Chardonnay. Very
complex wines.
I love that clone when I'm able to geek out on it in a Chardonnay, because I love Chardonnay, and that the Robert Young clone is known for making just beautiful wines.
So is that, I mean, as a vineyard guy, is it a nerve-wracking thing to take out a vineyard that has such historic significance?
It is. It certainly is. You know, it wasn't my decision alone. You know, the family, you know, Robert Young's four successors, we call them the scions, the budwood you place on the rootstock to grow. So if you imagine Robert as the rootstock for all of us, you know, his four children still run the day-to-day operations there. So it was a large collaborative multi-month
discussion.
Process and discussion and, you know, getting everybody comfortable with what needed to be done. And we just started going with it. So they're trusting me to do it. And it's for somebody where I'm at in my career as a viticulturist, vineyard manager, farmer, there's really no better place to be, because you're able to put your kind of fingerprints and thumbprints on what that property is going to be for the next generation. So it's a lot of fun, I think. And it is nerve-wracking, though. I mean, really, at the end of the day, it's, you know, you're going through and it's, you know, people are driving by taking pictures and just like, oh, no, it's... We're just rejuvenating, you know. This is just a normal process that all vineyards have to go through, and it's part of the process. It seems to be a little larger than what we'd normally do, but that's just given current market conditions and kind of the age of the vineyard. And it was time to make a big move, so that we just started doing that. So well,
can you talk about that a little bit, though? Just what are those factors that go into sort of considering a replant or pulling out, you know, a vineyard? I mean, I think people are kind of fascinated, and we hear about in Europe, oh, the vineyards have been there for hundreds of years, not replanted. But here in California, we do go through this replant process.
Yeah, certainly. So really what it comes down to is if certain blocks become unprofitable, that we just don't have any reason to farm them anymore. And usually in an older vineyard, that means decreased yields over time. Mm-hmm. You know, various different factors, wood diseases, just overall longevity of the vines. And, you know, over time, those yields tend to go down. And, you know, there's certain viruses over time, again, that can go through and infect vineyards. So they really do have kind of a life of 20 to 30 years on a good commercial vineyard in California. So it's, and we're there, you know, we're pulling out vines now that were planted in 97, and one block we will pull out, it was 88. Mm-hmm. So it was a big, you know, it's been about that time. Yeah. So it's just, you know,
they've
time
done their job.
Yeah. And it's not like, you know, we're radically changing anything necessarily from like a varietal standpoint, but just to get fresh, new virus-free vines that are, on newer rootstocks mm-hmm. than we had, maybe even available back then. It's kind of an important step that we just kind of have to do that. And, you know, it's a normal process. So
yeah.
Vineyards, you know, do it every 20 or 30 years. You know, it's just,
I love that people have like a romantic connection to the vineyards enough to question it though, and take pictures and feel like it's part of their history.
Yeah, there were certainly a lot of questions when we started pushing out some of the blocks closer to the road. You know, there was folks, hey, what's going on? It's like, no, this is just the normal.
It's farming.
Yep. Just part of the process. You know, it's a small part when you think of like 3 to 4 years getting a new vineyard established. You only have that window to see it in that phase. And then from there, you got 25 to 30 years of what you're normally used to seeing when you look at a vineyard. So it's shocking for some folks, but it's just part of the necessary process.
Yeah, and I think part of it is just our vineyards are still quite having our farms be vineyards is still a kind of a new thing in this new world. I mean, so I think we're still learning so much about the rootstock that works in certain soil types, how we're going to think through what we're growing for all the climate impacts we're seeing, you know, happening faster and faster, and what works in different areas. I mean, what clones you enjoy, what makes good wines, what goes into blends. I mean, just we haven't had, you know, your fifth generation, but we're still quite young. And I think that's part of this, too, is just such vast learning we've done in California over the last 5 decades.
Oh, yeah.
To know.
I mean, you think like 1963, what we knew probably about wine grapes and viticulture and what, what plant material was even available compared to now.
And even in just the last handful of years, newer rootstocks that were, you know, considering planting on the property and that have become available, which can deal with some of the soil issues that we're dealing with. You know, new rootstocks, GRN1 is one of them. That's probably going to be a good chunk of our planting and that. Even a decade ago, wasn't available.
So I haven't heard of it. So there you go.
So it's it's changing all the time, and it is a little nerve wracking when you're going to do a 30-year project, and you're not, you know, is that next thing a year away, or should you wait? Should you go? But you know, for us, we're really focused on kind of keeping that property in production. So we're definitely looking at all options, but got to put a stake in the ground at some point and start moving forward.
Make the best decision you can.
That's right.
Well, and it speaks to the sustainability of the vineyard, right? I mean, you have to replant to stay sustainable sometimes. And to your point, use different material than you would have many years ago. You were the first sustainability committee chairman for Sonoma County Wine Growers. Tell us about that. Like, what was your interest early on in getting involved in that?
He couldn't say no to me.
Well, outside of not being able to say no to Carissa.
My previous boss volunteered.
It was a conspiracy for sure between Kevin and myself. No.
But being fifth generation, I mean, I think it comes with that.
Yes.
Is certainly.
An ethos of sustainability. But, you know, what did you want to do?
Yeah, well, certainly, you know, there's... If you look around Sonoma County, and you know, Carissa says this all the time, you know, it's multi-generational farming families mostly that are out there farming grapes in Sonoma County. So that in itself, you know, kind of screams sustainability. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're not doing anything right, you usually don't stay around doing the same thing for multi-generations normally. So that kind of screamed that, and then just really kind of taking that to the next level, you know, getting folks certified through a third-party auditor, just you know, and outside folks that just come in and confirm your practices for the most part, but it also adds some legitimacy to what you're doing as well.
Yeah.
You know, my annual sustainability certification and audit will take me probably about 60 to 80 hours to prep for, go through and do. It's not a small task.
Right.
And I think it's great because it makes you, it kind of really forces you to think about things that you might not otherwise have thought about as you work your way through the program. And it provides insights definitely on a lot of other things. So it all kind of ties together, but it really forces you, I believe, to be kind of a better farmer mm-hmm. and really consider all those factors. So that, I think it's a great program, even if not certified, but going through the workbook and doing kind of your self-assessment for even the smaller growers, very, very valuable. And it's not just one and done. It's every year there's another section that pops up and I go, well, shoot, we could have done that, or we're going to add that to the list mm-hmm. for next year to do that.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Take that data point.
Well, so. It's continuously learning
yeah,
and improving.
Continuous improvement.
I mean, that's actually the crux of it all.
Yeah.
So, well, all that's right. Great. I know. So we have so much more good stuff, because I actually want to talk about the social sustainability piece, because you had one of your employees as part of our leadership academy. So we'll take a quick break and then jump into that when we come back. Good stuff. Today's guest is Dan Rotlesberger. He's the Vineyard Estate Manager for Robert Young Estate Winery. And right before the break, we were talking about all things sustainability, and we're just going to start touching on social sustainability. We're fresh back from an amazing week in Washington, D.C. with our vineyard employees, a trip that you went on last year, Dan, with Jose Guzman, who's one of the wonderful vineyard employees at Robert Young Winery. So maybe just talk about Jose, and you nominated him for the Leadership Academy, and maybe kind of a little bit about that experience and your experience in D.C.
Sure. Yeah. So I nominated Jose. Jose's basically my right-hand man out at Robert Young. He's been there now for 42 years, I want to say. Don't quote me on the exact number. But the Guzman family and also the Gonzalez family, we have, I think it's five different employees that are over 40 years, and there's several in the high 30s.
Wow.
So they've really been with the family a long time, planting right next to Robert Young back in the day. We've got great photos of them, but and they were little teenagers, and you know, now they're all grown up. But no, Jose's a great guy. He's kind of the heart and soul of our vineyard employee group out there, and he's a big gregarious.
Yes,
he likes to talk. I mean, he's a fun guy to be around. But no, he was certainly my number one choice to take place in the Leadership Academy, and he absolutely loved it. Really, I mean, he was on cloud. He'd always come back after a session and, Dan, did you hear about all this? Did you know all that? And he's debriefing me on everything from things that are available in the county, the Sonoma State. Oh, we went to Sonoma Catrer and we tasted these wines, and do we grow these clones, or what kind of wine would be closest to this wine that we make? So it was a great experience, the academy in general, for Jose. And then the trip to DC was really kind of next level. I thought, we really had the red carpet rolled out for us. Much thanks to Congressman Thompson in particular. He's a big supporter, and we had his undivided attention, it seemed like, the entire time mm-hmm. we were in D.C., except for a few floor votes he had to run to, which we were completely understanding. Yeah. But he had dinner with us, and then, I mean, kind of a personal tour, really, of the Capitol office buildings and the Capitol itself. It was really great to see, and I know the folks that went on the trip really, really appreciate it. I mean, to this day, we still hear stories from a lot of the guys and gals that went, and how much they enjoyed that and how much they felt appreciated by it.
Do you remember what bottle of Robert Young wine Jose brought to D.C.? Because don't they present some of the wines and talk about them there?
So in D.C., we brought a few, but the one that we were really focused on that day was our Malone, which is not very popular around here. I believe Sara Lee's Vineyard has a block of it. I haven't confirmed that, if that's still there, because that's, I believe, where we got our budwood for it. Oh. We have about 2 acres of it, and it makes a very, very nice, crisp, dry summer wine. Hmm. Kind of along the lines of Sauvignon Blanc, if you were to kind of go in the middle between Sauvignon Blanc and Chardonnay.
Interesting.
But very, very fun, good wine, which paired well with the D.C. heat in July.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it was just fun. I mean, we've talked about this, but to see the Vineyard employees in front of members of Congress and or at restaurants with the Psalms and saying, I grew the grapes for this wine. Yeah. I grew these grapes. And to be able to showcase with such pride of what they do and have, in their words, very important people acknowledge them, honor them, celebrate them, was just incredible experience. So,
yeah, and I don't think, you know, I get the feeling sometimes talking to folks, the vineyard employee community in the county doesn't realize how important they are to us. And that kind of breaks my heart, mm-hmm. you know, in a little way, in a little bit. But yeah, I think through programs like this and, you know, showing them that, you know, they're as important to this operation and this industry as anybody else out there, really, really meant a lot to a lot of the vineyard guys on the trip.
And Jose is just awesome. So now he's like a spokesperson for the Leadership Academy. He shows up at our alumni events.
Yeah, he'll come. He says, oh, Krista says I need to go to this thing tomorrow. I'm like, go for it. Yeah. You always
you
have if Krista tells you need to be somewhere, you have my permission to be there.
That's awesome.
Well, we have to wrap things up on this great segment. Great talking with you, Dan. Thank you so much for joining us
on
Good Stuff. And good luck with the summer ahead.
Yeah, great. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, Dan.
Once again, we have had a great guest on.
I know.
Talked about so many great things having to do with farming and the community and Jose. I think maybe we need Jose on the show.
I think we should bring Jose on the show. He's awesome.
Yeah.
I would just like when he's in the room, it just makes me happy. Well, I don't know. It's like hard to not smile because he's a big guy. He has so much enthusiasm and energy. He's like just a great mentor. We had him be a mentor for the new Leadership Academy class. And he's just, great all around human being.
Okay.
So, Jose Guzman, we love you.
Okay, and we didn't touch on sort of visiting hours and that sort of thing, but Robert Young Estate is a place that is regularly open for tasting. The website is www.rye.com, Instagram at Robert Young Winery. So go and check out what they're up to. They have some great tasting experiences amidst the vineyards.
I know, it's beautiful.
You get immersed.
Yeah, I've been there a number of times tasting, and what a great experience. Wine and just gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous tasting room.
Yep.
So in honor, I know I'm gonna have a Robert Young wine for my Tuesday night. I don't know about you, but I am going to celebrate the wine Jose brought to D.C. last year. And they pronounce it Melo, but it looks like Milan to me. But it's the 2023. I have not had it. I mean, I tried it in D.C., but just to sit down without sort of the chaos of D.C. trip and enjoy a glass, if you'd like to come over, you're welcome. But that's what I'm going to do.
I'm so happy to know about it. I mean, more crisp, fun whites coming out of anywhere in Sonoma County is a good thing. So,
awesome.
Yeah, I'm going to continue that theme. I mean, I do love the Robert Young wines. The history with Chardonnay is something that we absolutely need to celebrate in Sonoma County. And so I like their clone 17 Alexander Valor Chardonnay. That's the clone that Robert Young sort of established. And from just a quick little bit of research, it looked like he sort of merged the Dijon clone with the Wente clone to come up with his own clone. So let's have that.
Let's have that. I'm in.
Okay. Well, I think our Tuesday night is all set.
Yeah, I was gonna say shaping up well.
All right. Well, thank you everyone for joining us on The Good Stuff this Saturday. And yeah, Robert Young, Jose, all good things. And from Sonoma County to wherever you are, Krista, and I hope you always remember to drink the good stuff.
Cheers to that.